Welcome to the Creative Genius Captivated podcast. My name is Yiqing Zhao, a miserable medical student turned award-winning actor, filmmaker, and creativity coach. While my name literally means artistic youth in Chinese, it took me almost a decade to find my calling and path. I help multi-hyphenates overcome burnout, unleash their creativity, and become unstoppable using mindset and customized strategies. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. How's your Monday afternoon? Welcome to the Creative Genius Captivated podcast. This is Yiqing, and today I have the pleasure to invite Emma Goldman Sherman, who is a wonderful award-winning playwright, dramaturg, and teacher. Hi, Emma. It's been a while.
Hi, Yiqing. It's great to see you.
Great to see you too. And I love your shirt. I have to say that again. I know I said it already. It's very bright. And I think it really fits the topic of what we're going to discuss today is to healing drama. Did I say healing drama? Healing trauma with writing.
Both. We're talking about healing trauma with drama.
Healing trauma with drama. Oh gosh. You know what? That's the show title of this episode. I never plan my show titles beforehand. I let the conversation flow. And when I start editing, I come up with the title after editing. And now I don't have to do it. And this is the first episode out of my all 14 episodes. This is the first one where I already have the title because you said it.
I'm happy to provide it to you.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us about you and how you started writing and teaching and your plays and everything.
Oh, well, starting writing was just something I've always done since I was a very, very little tiny person, knowing that I had a story to tell and I had to figure out how to tell stories. And I was also always really concerned that other people should also tell their stories. So I've also been, you know, a coach and a teacher to get other people to tell their stories because I never want to be the only person with a story. You know, I want my story to resonate with other people, but I wanted to free other people to tell their story too.
I think that's how we met. Was that 2018 or 2019-ish? Mm-hmm. You were having the workshop and I have no idea. I can't remember now how I found out about it. You probably put something up on, I don't know where.
Do you remember? Word of mouth. I never advertised for any actors, but people would come and we developed a whole bunch of plays.
Exactly. And at that time I lived very close. I think that place in Lower Manhattan, I think it was on Bleecker Street.
Yes, the Sheens.
Yeah, the Sheens. Yes, I lived very close. I lived in Chinatown for 3 years at the time. And I think that was one of the events that I always look forward to, you know, showing up for.
Thanks. Thank you. It was always a pleasure to have you in the room.
Oh, thanks. I wish I could stay. A lot of times I'm like, oh, I have a dance class to go to, so I have to go to the dance class, you know.
Yeah.
So tell us about your childhood. And you said you started writing when you were a tiny person, which is also my story, but you go ahead and then I'll tell you mine.
Okay. So my childhood was in the suburbs of Philadelphia, where no one can hear you scream. So it was a pretty terrifying, very abusive, physically abusive, sexually abusive, emotionally abusive childhood in a kind of middle class, owner class. We owned our home. Very white suburb outside of Philadelphia. Yeah. And my parents put me in therapy when I was 8. So it was pretty clear to them that I was pretty depressed and things were not okay. But, you know, that there was no way for me to tell what was going on. So nothing was discovered. I didn't have any understanding or even consciousness of the traumas until I gave birth at the age of 38. And having a child and having a very traumatic delivery that resulted in a cesarean section led to all kinds of memories resurfacing. And then I had to deal with all that.
You are not the first person who told me about how giving birth to a child brought all those trauma experiences back. Yeah, do you feel like it was like you were suppressing it and all of a sudden because of this transformation into motherhood, it just somehow showed up?
I think that I was always trying to figure out if there was something wrong that I could put my finger on and I could never figure that out. So I was very open to knowing what, you know, like I am interested in being able to be the best possible person I can be, to be as present as I can be. And if there's something in the way of that, I sort of am aware of that, or I used to be aware of it. Like, this is bothering me. Mm-hmm. I should be able to be more present. And I trained as an actor. I was really interested in behavior and psychology and trying to figure out all these things. So having a child just really put me on high alert, really. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, ooh, now I have to protect this child. What do I need to know? You know, what am I not aware of? Because I think if we are not aware of the history that we have of trauma, we can become abusers. You mm-hmm. know, it can be just an endless cycle. And so I really started to think about what do I need to know? You know, like, let it come, just like, tell me, because I didn't want to mess up this perfect little being. So yeah, I was trying to figure out how to raise my son.
Did you do that through writing, or was that a big part of your writing?
A lot of it was through the writing, and just exploring and reading and trying to, you know, listen to whatever was happening inside me. Right. I had a lot of difficulty playing with the baby. I was not spontaneous. You know, like, there was something wrong and I couldn't really figure out what that was. And then my memory started to come back. So, yeah.
Interesting. You know what? I'm not a mom yet, but I have a dog, and having her now, by next month, it will be a year. And she's one. She's 1 and almost 2 months old. It's like having a baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I found myself writing, and even in my newsletters, I tell stories about my Lucy all the time. I'm like, why am I telling everybody about Lucy all the time? Because it just showed up. Like, mm-hmm. I did not do that on purpose, but it just came to me, and I said, okay, let me connect the dots, and it has something to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But when we're in charge of or taking care of someone, some creature, I think it doesn't have to be human. It can be an animal.
Yeah.
It's like we are repeating how we were cared for.
Yes.
If we were not cared for well, then if we're more aware of, well, why am I, you know, why do I want to yell? Or why do I want to not share with the baby problem mm-hmm. that is rising? Because for me, it was not second nature. It was like, ooh, this is really hard. Why is this so hard? And Yeah, so the memories were there to answer that. But I think memory is only one way that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And memories can be faulty. And like I look at this in the play, I think we know through behavior and sort of random actions that when we're not fully mindful, they're just automatic behaviors. And it's like, ooh, that could be a clue into how I was treated as a very small being. So yeah, I was always really conscious of that.
I was just talking to my dog trainer yesterday about how she was sometimes trying to do certain things to piss me off. That's exactly what I said. And my dog trainer just said, I don't think that was her intention. You chose to feel pissed off. At that moment, when she picked something on the ground, you chose to feel pissed off. That was not her intention.
Right. Of course.
And I was like, oh, right. And it just, you know, reminded me of how I was treated as a child. And I'm like, why am I so controlling at times with my dog? Why did I have to, a lot of times I have to make her go at this time and at this spot, and you know, and I was like, oh gosh, it was because I had controlling parents. That's it.
Right. Yeah. And so this is how trauma is passed down. Mm-hmm. And the sooner we can be more aware, you know, then we can head it off, you know, mm-hmm. we cannot traumatize our babies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, tell me your favorite play. It can be yours or a favorite play that you read, or both.
I have tons of favorite plays
that I know, of course,
I have read. But wow, I don't know if I have like one specific favorite that I would point to. I mean, there are just so many, and you know, and I have students and I love their work, and mm-hmm. it would be very unfair if I just like said the name of one. Yeah, I don't know if I could even, you know, say like, oh, that's my favorite play, or that's what, like, it changes.
Or what if, let me ask you this, if I say the most unforgettable one, or like the one that gave you the most visceral response, the first one that came to your mind?
Oh, well, that would probably be Cabaret, but that's not a play, that's a musical.
Theater, any piece of theater.
No. But yeah, I mean, the big musicals are always really so intense to have, you know, mm-hmm. to feast your eyes on and to see. So I love those. I'm a huge fan of ancient Greek theater. I'm a huge fan of really strange, odd little downtown plays that, you know, I've seen in tiny little spaces. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there are just millions. I mean, really, there are so many, and I don't get to see them as much anymore because, you know, we're all inside. And I'm really actually very upset that there are no mask mandates. I think it's really important that the theater bring the mask mandates back because it does not feel safe to me. So, yeah.
I saw a Funny Girl on Saturday.
Oh, how marvelous.
It's so good. You know, and so when you said cabaret, when you said it, I yes, musicals, it's really because of the music. It just like, mm-hmm. you know, like when my parents come to town, I would just bring them to see a musical because they don't speak English. They don't understand English, but they understand music. And it doesn't right. matter. They can follow the story.
And it can be so prioritizing. Like mm-hmm. it can take difficult, awkward situation with people that you're about to go to a show with, and like things are awkward, and then you go to the show and it's all gone. Like
exactly
feels better. But I think I thought of cabaret because there is a kind of confrontation with the audience where they say, how easily are you swayed? How easy is it for us to get you to sing Edelweiss, you know, and to become like the Nazis, really? Mm-hmm. And that's so interesting to me that it does it every night, that everyone is swept up in this idea and this moment. And then they realize that they're, you know, singing this Nazi theme song. And I think that's really very dramatic and exciting. So, yeah, I think the way ideas are conveyed in the theater is exciting to me.
Is that why you choose theater as your medium?
Well, I choose it because I guess I feel like it's chosen me, but yeah. I mean, I think I love the idea of a lot of people in the same room breathing synchronous, you know, in a synchronous way and having an experience together. I think the idea of the community of that is really important to me. And I also think we have screens everywhere we go all the time.
Yeah.
And to not have a screen between a performer and an audience is really important to me. So we will be streaming my show Fucked in the fall at the Tank, from the Tank, but it will also be live. So yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to create an immersive show that will also reach people through the screen by streaming. I think it's really important to have that kind of access for people who don't feel safe in the theater or can't travel, so that we can reach a lot of people, even, you know, on a global scale.
Yeah.
And so that's exciting, but I really love the theater for its intimacy.
I think, you know, I told you I got into filmmaking when the pandemic started, and I think it was really because of the loss of theater. And I was doing a whole bunch of theater and then it was gone. And I was like, okay, I need people to see my work. And see, here's the thing is that you said theater chose you. I still don't have this feeling. I feel like whenever I do something, it's because I chose that. Mm-hmm. When you say theater chose you, are you saying that it's like you just feel called, or how does that feel in your body?
So when I'm imagining a story, mm-hmm. I mostly imagine it for the stage.
Right?
I imagine voices, I hear dialogue, very, very, you know, mostly dialogue. And whatever it looks like is up to someone else. And that frustrates directors and designers who are like, but what is this place? And for me, that's for collaborators to deal with. I just really focus on what I'm hearing in my head. So mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's chosen me. It's also very present tense. It's about what's happening this minute all the time. And it's not about backstory and all this, you know, history and things like that. So that's why it feels like the right medium. I mean, of course, the theater itself, like the gatekeepers have not chosen me, but the medium has chosen me.
Got it. That's so funny, because now that I'm learning screenwriting, and the major difference is really you don't really have that much dialogue in screenwriting.
Right. That's right.
It's and I've, different. Yeah, it's completely different. And I'm struggling with that because I love writing dialogue.
Well, actors are the best playwrights because they understand forward momentum and they understand how to make things happen with language that they are speaking. Whereas a screenplay is so close to a novel is describing, describing, describing. And that's, for me, that just feels very passive.
It's hard to describe. And, you know, it's a very, I would say it's a very different experience in terms of the mind-body connection, I would say. My screenplays are very dialogue heavy. They look like, you know, they are very much like theater. And that's really my thing, is to write theater like films, to make theater like films, because that can be done and that has been done. And that's still being done a lot of times, you know, but then really there's a different mind body connection there.
Yeah.
And I have to, even now, I know I'm writing a screenplay, I still have to start with the dialogue and then fill out the missing pieces later, but I start with the dialogue.
Well,
yeah.
You might also write a play.
I wrote a full-length play back in 2020. It was written for streaming theater. I'm now adapting it into a screenplay because it's also very visual. So we'll see what comes out of that. But it was written as a full-length play.
Great.
Yeah. So tell us about Fucked and, you know, how long you've been working on it, all the backstory about it.
Well, I wrote Fucked after 2017 October, which was the month of all the Me Too news, where there were a lot of very well-known women in the news, and they were talking about what had happened to them, and people were not believing them. And it was very frustrating to be a woman, I think, at that time in the United States, because there were so many voices and so many stories, and then so much anger and hate and silencing. And I wanted to write something that would help people understand why it's so hard to speak up, like why 99.9% of people who are speaking out and speaking up about sexual abuse or sexual harassment are not making it up, because it is incredibly difficult to bring these stories to the public or even to a friend or to a family member. And so that struggle was something I really, really wanted to explore, and that ended up becoming Fucked.
How long is it?
It's a 90-minute play. Yeah.
That's my favorite length. I'm biased, but because when you go longer than that, you have to have an intermission. And a handful of times I left the theater during the intermission because the stories do not speak to me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I'm hoping this will actually run a little shorter, because we want to offer the audience time to process and talk about their own experiences and, you know, anything they need to talk about after the play. In the readings, people have said it's incredibly empowering to see the play, and that it changes how they think about drama, how they think about survivors. And, you know, it's not just a drama, it's also a comedy. It isn't like, oh, this is like a story where you have like a family and then this secret comes out. It is not like that at all. And there's no fourth wall. It is a very different kind of play where the actors are with the audience from the very beginning, looking at the audience, talking with the audience, sitting in the audience, playing with the audience. So it's really about what's happening between the audience and the actors throughout so much of the play. And it's very different from like a regular Me Too kind of story.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important that you make it interactive. And that's why plays are called plays. The point is to play. And yeah. So would you say there's a lot of play in this.
It's very comic. It's there are two songs, and there's a striptease, and there are all kinds of really strange surprises. so yeah, it's a very different kind of night out.
I definitely have to see it. I already told you I'm going to see it, but now it's like I can't wait for it to happen.
Yay. And thank you so much for being a supporter of Fucked, because we're in the midst of fundraising for the show, and we actually have an anonymous matching grant donor who will match anyone's donation so that it will be doubled right now until Sunday night at midnight.
So, wow.
Yes.
So listeners out there, please make a donation. I already did. And, you know, you make a donation and I support any kind of art as much as I can. So, you know, I think it's really important to keep these things going and keep them alive and keep the artists, keep help the artists keep creating work.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. People will hear about it and want to support it because it really does give voice to marginalized voices. And it helps people really understand that there are actually lots of new ways beyond talk therapy that help people sort through trauma.
Yeah.
And there's been so many advances in what people can do to heal from trauma. Mm-hmm. So we're really hoping to partner with organizations like Take Back the Night and offer student discounts when the show is running so that like gender studies students and psychology students can come and see it at a discount, because we think it really does have something to say about how we can heal today.
Yeah. Do you think this play, you already told us how you started this process, but do you think this play also speaks to you being a feminist and autistic? Probably the autistic part is not, I don't know if it's part of it.
It's not part of it because I didn't know when I wrote the play. I wrote the play in 2017.
And how did you find out?
I wasn't diagnosed until 2021.
So that was recent.
Yeah, it's very recent because there were never any studies done on female people with autism. So nobody really had a sense that girls could have autism. And most female brains have different ways of expressing their autism. So a lot of female brain like responses are more social than the difficulties children who are boys run into, because the boys tend to be a lot less social. Mm. And girls are socialized to be pleasing and to make eye contact. Like, it's more important in our society for girls to do that. So mm-hmm. girls tend to have a different way of showing up as autistic, but clearly theater and writing has always been a huge special interest that I do all the time. I mean, I have to keep doing it. So that's one of the things, because autistic people do have these sort of obsessive special interests. And we also have a lot of, issues with sensory sort of overload with sensory, I'm forgetting everything. Anyway, we have sensory disabilities. And so, but those can be really hidden with girls, because like a quiet girl who doesn't speak a lot is, you know, just thought of as shy. Whereas a girl who's constantly speaking, who's hyperlexic, like I was, you know, reading, you know, before I could walk even, you know, just like really.
Oh, that was me too.
Right. If are you autistic?
I don't know. That's the thing. I should. You know what? I've been suspecting I have ADHD. Uh-huh. I have typical ADHD tendencies, but I never got an official diagnosis because all the psychiatry department, I just could not make an appointment. And my therapist told me I do not have it. She said, if you probably only have the symptoms, and that could be trauma, that could be, but you do not have it, because they have to go through a very, lengthy.
It's a long process. It was like
it's a long process.
12 hours of testing. Yeah, it was definitely a long process. And when I went in last summer, the doctor said, when you showed up, I thought there's no way that she's autistic. However, you have scored higher than anyone I've had in this category, right? And so he was amazed. He was like, it's really, really new that women are being tested at all. So it's like a brand new thing. And there's a really great website called Embrace Autism that has mm-hmm. a lot of the tests. And I scored so high on those tests, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so.
Got yeah. it. I am a psychology junkie, personality junkie. I just figured out all those, right? Because it's about figuring out who we are, but also like you don't limit yourself with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's helpful for you too. I think I should look into that, because I'm as you were speaking, I was like, I checked this box, I checked that box, I checked a lot of boxes.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's yeah. Would you say, are you going to write a play about that, about autism?
Maybe. I mean, it's possible. I think I may have already written one.
Oh.
What happened was I wrote the first act anyway. This is a play with an intermission. And I'm sorry to say, but it does have an intermission. And at the end of the first act, I thought, I don't understand these people. They're very strange. I don't know why they're acting the way they are. And then once I was diagnosed, it all made sense.
Mm.
So, and now I've been sort of playing with the second act, which takes place much later. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
You know what? It's funny that you said, just sorry to say, but it does have an intermission. Now I'm just thinking about my own play, the full length play that I wrote. It also has an intermission. And it's
important.
Intermissions are not the problem. The problem is if you can't figure out what to put in the second act, or your first act is not as strong, that's what makes you dread intermissions, you know?
Right. There has to be a reason to come back. There has to be
a
huge question, a dramatic question that makes the audience go, oh my God, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, then your intermission isn't going to work.
Exactly. And you know, that's the thing. I told you, I saw Funny Girl. It's long. It's like almost 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But it's so tight. And I mean, yes, it is funny because that's Funny Girl, but it's a sad ending. It's a, you know, I'm not going to spoiler for those who, but it's not a happy ending. It's a sad ending. And I was in tears at the end. It's just so heartbreaking. But then I'm like, but that's what I'm here for.
That's right.
You're on this ride of the highs and lows, and that's about being human. We're not just here on this earth to experience all the happiness. That's not what we're here for.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And to be able to sit in the dark and have all those feelings is such a great privilege. I mean, it's so exciting for me to sit in the theater and go, anything could happen.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So
What are your parting quotes to our audience? I am going to have you type the show, type everything about Fucked. I'm going to include them in the show notes so that they can just go find the show. But I am curious to know your parting quotes. Yeah, like
I wanted to tell people, you know, if this makes you say, wow, I really should be writing my story, I have created a space for that. And so I hold that space. It's called bravespace.online. And I support and nurture marginalized voices every week. So check it out. It's, you know, www.bravespace.online. And come and, you know, write. Or people can come and do other kinds of creative things. People come and paint. People have come to work with clay. And yeah, I mean, they can do whatever they want. And I offer support in the chat and prompts, and we talk about the process of creation. And then there are salons where people share what they're doing. So yeah.
I should check it out. Cause I, you know, after, since COVID, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to MS groups anymore. And I'm like, nope, now it's time to come back. But what is one last piece of, I hate to use the word advice because I don't follow advice myself, and I don't think anyone should, but like quote in terms of that one piece of truth or wisdom that you can impart to our audience.
Wow. I think it's really about listening and being true to yourself, right? There has to be, you know, like we know the truth inside, whether you think anyone will believe you or not, you know the truth. And I think just standing in that knowledge, like allowing yourself to be there,
mm-hmm.
will bring the support that you need. I mean, and asking for help is also really important if that truth is scary to you or difficult for you. But there is help. There is a lot of help out there. It's probably not your family, definitely not this government, but you know, there is help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we do. You're also a coach, right? You coach writing?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also a coach. I work more on the mindset and the strategies of, you know, making a living creatively.
Right.
So, but we are helpers. That's what we do.
Right. Yeah.
And we, you have a support system yourself, and I have one too. And yeah.
Yeah. It takes time to build that. And it was hard for me as an autistic person to know that I needed to ask for help, right? Because autism, it sets you sort of back into yourself a lot.
Mm.
That can be very difficult to get beyond.
Yeah.
So yeah, that has been problematic for me. And it took forever to figure that out. But listening and journaling and trying to understand the world, it gets easier.
It does. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Emma. I've so enjoyed this conversation. And everybody, you should check out Brave Spaces and Fucked. And because of this title of your show, now my show is going to be explicit, which is great. Which is great because, you know, Apple Podcasts, they have to rate like the, because we use this word. So I have to rate it as explicit.
We spell it F-U-K-T.
K-T, I know. It doesn't matter. I think it's a great thing that I make my show explicit so that it automatically filters out people who are not, you know.
Okay.
And then we are free to use cuss words and everything. So that's good.
Okay.
That's good. That's what we do as artists, is to express freely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Emma. I hope I'll see you at your show. I will be there in person.
I will be there.
Of course. I will be there in person. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with me. You're now one step closer to having the creative life and career you want. If you would like to deepen the work, go visit coaching.yikingzhao.com to find out how to work with me. Or you can hang out with me on Instagram at yikingzhao1222. If you would like to receive a freebie, 7 questions to get you unstuck, please subscribe to my newsletter. You will love it. All right, I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Happy creating. Bye.